our own Eric Smith to talk about Kyle Lowry's re-signing. Eric, thanks very much for joining us. There was some conjecture, some talk, especially early in the process, that perhaps Kyle Lowry went somewhere else. But Eric, at the end of the day, doesn't this just make too much sense for both him and the Raptors for it not to happen?
Yeah, it really does. And I think the way that it got done, Raj, as well, you know, whether there was overtures from other teams or not, and I know a lot of people in recent days have been talking a lot about the Minnesota Timberwolves and what they've done, and they ultimately went out and got Jeff Teague and then made another move today with Taj Gibson. If I believe, obviously, everything that was written, even in what Kyle penned for the Players Tribune as a part of making his announcement, it seems like this is where he wanted to be, and I think it's where he wanted to be for a number of reasons, not the least of which is all the familial stuff that he speaks about and the comfort that he feels in being in Toronto and how it does feel as he penned it with the title home. But there's also no denying the financial ramifications of staying with Toronto as well, and the fact that going to another team, you in very in strong likelihood would not be looking at the kind of cash that he ultimately signed for today with the reported 3-year $100 million contract. And I think it's a deal that probably works, Raj, for both sides, because going into this process, many believed, myself included, and I'm sure Kyle himself, that we're probably looking at getting a 5-year deal and this might be your last major contract. Well, if he's able to continue to perform at the level that he has the last few seasons and continues to perform at that high level and, of course, stay healthy, this isn't his last contract. And with the money going the way it is, in the NBA, with the television contract, especially stateside with TNT, ESPN, ABC, the fact that the money will still be there in another 3 years, you can still have at least one more contract in you. So you're getting your kind of not quite max deal right now, but you're getting max dollars for those 3 years. It allows the Raptors financial flexibility as well to say, we will lock you in for the max money on those 3 years, but it gives us the flexibility in 3 years to make another decision on you at a time when we'll be facing a decision regarding DeMar DeRozan as well, at a time where we're hopefully facing a decision regarding some of our young pieces in terms of knowing by then for certain if they're already locked in and part of our future or if we've given up on those guys and moved in another direction with others. So I think this allows both sides to have the wiggle room to be kind of happy now and still relevant now, but have the flexibility to then readdress this same decision in 3 years as opposed to 4 or 5.
Well, and fair enough on both the Raptors and the Lowry side for the accounting purposes, if we can say that, Eric, it makes sense from that. But then when you take a look at it and, you know, here we are, the landscape and everything else. So it's Lowry, DeRozan, and this team nucleus. Is it good enough to still compete? Do you have more flexibility? What do you do moving forward? Maybe talk about that, because whether it's a good thing or a bad thing for Lowry or the Raptors financially, this is a team core we're going to see. Now, there might be pieces change, granted, but when you commit that much to that player, what you see is what you get with the Raptors. Is that good enough to eventually get to an NBA final?
Well, I'll tell you what, Roger, this is a team that, and I don't want to be too much of a revisionist here, but this was 2 years ago, a team that was in the Eastern Conference Finals, went to Game 6 against Cleveland, got beat handily in the 4 games they lost. This year, swept by that same Cavaliers team in Round 2. I would like to see what this team looks like with a full season of Serge Ibaka, Kyle Lowry, and DeMar DeRozan together. Now, all that said, one of the other moves that went down today was the reported deal with P.J. Tucker going to the Houston Rockets on a 4-year deal, or at least 3 with an option for $30-plus million. And it's reported out there that the Raptors actually made a 3-year offer at $11 million per, so he could have actually got a little bit less money, perhaps, with one less year. How much does James Harden, Chris Paul, weather, tax situation with no state tax in Texas play into the decision that Tucker ultimately made to go with the Rockets as opposed to the Raptors? I think Tucker could have and would have, and I had hoped, should have been a key part to what Toronto's trying to do. But to me, it's still a pretty formidable threesome for the Raptors to have in Lowry, Ibaka, and DeRozan. And part of the reason I say this as well, Raj, is as good as they are, we can sit here and argue if they're as good as Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Jimmy Butler. Maybe, maybe not. Are they as good as Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry? No. Are they as good as James Harden, Chris Paul, and blank? Who do you want to be that blank? Eric Gordon? I mean, it's a very good, deep team in Houston, but I still think even the Rockets are missing a piece in some sense, even though they're still extremely talented and maybe from top to bottom a better team than Toronto. But what I'm getting at here, Raj, and I tweeted this out a little bit earlier today, I'd be shocked, actually. I was going to say surprised. I'd be shocked if some of the remaining free agents don't start looking more towards the Eastern Conference, and especially now with Lowry and Ibaka re-signed alongside DeRozan, don't start looking at Toronto and Boston and Washington and Milwaukee. And the reason I bring those four teams up, and this is all based on a major if, but Raj, you have heard the same things I have and read the same reports and seen the same speculation. If the rumblings are true that LeBron James is leaving Cleveland potentially for the Los Angeles Lakers next year, or maybe even the Los Angeles Clippers, some even pie in the sky said, or even the Golden State Warriors. Point being, if he goes west, the Eastern Conference could be very wide open in a year. And look at what else has happened this summer alone, this last 2 weeks. Chicago's taken a major step back, I think, in terms of their relevancy over the next couple of seasons. Atlanta has taken a step back. No longer do they have Jeff Teague. I mean, they already didn't. They had passed the reins to Dennis Schroeder, but now Paul Millsap is likely on the move, and Al Horford's already been in Boston for a year, and Kyle Korver went to Cleveland last season. But Atlanta's taken a step back. Keep going down the list and take a look at the Eastern Conference, Roger, overall. There's only four teams in my mind. You might make a slight case for Charlotte, maybe. They're kind of a question mark. Miami, question mark, based on a huge second half they had last year. And then, of course, Philadelphia is rising, and they're intriguing. But there's at least a remaining four, five, six, even seven teams in the Eastern Conference that I think are serious, you know, bottom of the barrel, bottom of the Eastern Conference standings, bottom of the playoff standings at the very best type teams. There's four or five teams at most that are right on the heels of the Cavs. And if the Cavs don't have LeBron James back next year, suddenly, as good as Boston is, as good as Toronto is, as good as Washington is, as good as Milwaukee is, and even getting better, all of those clubs, to me, look that much better. Because the top talent, the best teams, the deepest teams, arguably 15, 17 of the top 20 stars in the league, are all in the West. The Eastern Conference is so open that if I were a free agent right now, if I couldn't join the Golden State Warriors, Raj, I'd be signing with a team in the East.
That's a great point. Eric Smith is with us. I'm Roger Lajoie. I want LeBron James to sign with the Golden State Warriors. I think that would be fantastic. No, that would be good. They should all, everybody should play in Golden State. They should be a dream team, be 11 players. I would love to see that. And then we could just, like, you know, not even play the regular season.
But, and yeah, Roger, just quickly say as well, how interesting is it now that when you think about the money that Kevin Durant gave up, and let's be real, he's still, you know, making more money than you or I or all of our listeners combined probably will ever make in our lifetime. In one season or a couple of seasons, but he took less money to be able to come back to Golden State to ultimately then allow the Warriors to be active and go out and sign Sean Livingston or re-sign Andre Iguodala, and maybe even now be a player in the market for a shooter like a Nick Young, already a talented three-point shooter, to come to that three-point barrage of a team in the Golden State Warriors. And part of the reason I bring up a guy like Nick Young is Golden State, with all the money they have, Raj, and all the signings they've had and all the talent they have, they still have their mid-level exception, which they're able to use potentially on a guy like Nick Young. Toronto right now is in a position where they need to shed a little bit of salary in order to retain certain exceptions and exemptions under their salary cap and within their payroll. That's why you're hearing some of the trade rumors today, whether it be about a Corey Joseph or last couple of weeks about a Damari Carroll or a Jonas Valanciunas, et cetera, because the Raptors are in a position now where in order to save some money but also save financial flexibility for other, as I say, exceptions and exemptions, under the NBA's collective bargaining agreement and under that salary cap, they will need to probably make some moves to give themselves that wiggle room, or it goes back to what you said a couple of minutes ago, that they kind of aren't what they are. Right now, as of this second, Bobby Webster, Masai Ujiri, their hands are somewhat tied by the lack of flexibility financially as far as signings go, but if they're able to make a trade or two, free up a little bit of cash, bring down their number a little bit, and get below that tax threshold, then suddenly now they would have some of those exceptions that I speak of.
Eric Smith is with us. Busy day. Kyle Lowry re-signing with the Raptors and Patrick Marleau signing a 3-year contract with the Toronto Maple Leafs as a free agent. Details available at sportsnet.ca. Check it out. We'll have updates throughout the course of the night as well during Sunday night, after Sunday night baseball. And I'll join you again tomorrow morning between 8 and noon to talk about this more as we continue with Eric Smith. So Eric, now, you know, you mentioned Serge Ibaka. What do you think the philosophy, where does that go? And does Lowry signing, you know, was it something that in the back of his mind, you jury figured, look, this is going to get done and you act accordingly. But now that it's done, how does his game plan change regarding him and some of the other moving pieces on this club?
Well, you and I are both in the same boat. We've said this 1,000 times over the years, Raj. I think we both kind of hate dealing with the fantasy aspect of trades and signings and everything else. But all that said, I think Serge Ibaka in today's NBA and at this point of his career is better served playing in the middle as a center, as a five, as opposed to a four. And that might mean then the Raptors are that much more active in terms of trying to find a trade partner for Jonas Valanciunas. On a personal level, I think Jonas is a fantastic guy. I think he's been great in the city and great with the fans, great with the media, et cetera. I think he's been dogged at times for lack of production when I think he's been pretty damn good. But there's no denying he would have to drastically transform his game and suddenly become that much more athletic and that much more of a shooter, even from distance, even from long range, for him to be as effective in today's NBA as the Raptors might need him to be. Tough thing about that is you're trying to trade him to another team. Other teams know that as well. So it's going to be difficult, I think. So that, to me, is where Ibaka fits better. Could Jonas, at this point, still even be effective coming off the bench in a secondary role? Perhaps. But I think the Tucker signing, Raj, is interesting in that were the Raptors prepared to hand the reins to a veteran forward like P.J. Tucker and have him start, knowing that he, you know, maybe isn't going to be a guy that can give you 32, 35 minutes every single night, but his veteran leadership, his defensive presence, guarding the opposing team's best player, maybe he slides in there over Damari Carroll. And the reason I then bring up Damari Carroll is if you were even able to find a suitor for his very large $15, $16 million contract and you were thinking about even trading him, I think you've got to ask yourself a serious question right now if you can even afford to trade a Damari Carroll right now, because there's a glaring weakness at either the three or the four with P.J. Tucker and potentially Patrick Patterson not returning to this team. Even if a guy like Norm Powell were to slide into that three spot, if you had Ibaka playing the five, who's your power forward right now? And is it something that you can fill internally, or is it something that needs to be addressed externally via trade, or as I say, a trade that then opens up some money, which then allows you to be a spender on a forward in the free agent market?
Lots of moving parts still with the Raptors. Eric Smith joining us. Yeah, absolutely. Be an interesting offseason for sure. But Kyle Lowry re-upping with the team today. One piece has fallen into place. Eric, thanks so much for your time.
All right, Roger. Thank you.